Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about how Pearl isn't dead. In fact, it's getting faster. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 383 for April 12, 2016, The Future of Pearl Performance. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, MerlinStoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big stories, the little stories. Well, not many of the little stories. The big stories, the projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and go start playing with it. I've about half the shows I want to do that, but I don't have any more time. Who has spare time anymore? Anyway, joining me this week is Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Glad to be here.
And for those of you that have the video feed on this, you may notice I have a slightly different background. I'm actually on the 11th floor of ZipRecruiter because they're closing down the second floor where I was taping all the other shows from. But what's great is I can keep the windows open and there's a wonderful skyline down there. And if you look way down, you can see the ocean. So I'm having a happy time being here. So there was people that have been saying for a long time that we're not doing enough Pearl shows. Here I am, the Pearl guy, and I'm doing stuff about everything else. So I reached out to the Pearl community and I said, hey, I could really use a couple of show ideas so we can get started on this. And today's guest is Will the Chill Braswell, really well known within the Pearl community. And he volunteered to do some discussions about his primary focus was with regard to Pearl, which is making Pearl go faster. And you might already say, well, doesn't Pearl go fast enough? I mean, it certainly was better than Ruby for a while, so isn't that enough? But he apparently has some very specific opinions on this. We're actually going to do two shows with him. This week's show is going to be sort of the overview of the Pearl 11 project. Yes, indeed, 11 as in the Spinal Tap reference goes all the way to 11. Actually, a couple other ways to look at the 11. I'll have him describe that in a few minutes. And next week, we're going to be talking with him about R Pearl, which is his primary focus, and that's about really making a subset of Pearl be compiled in line directly down to C code and really optimizing the heck out of it. So, Aaron, I know you're not much of a Pearl guy, but what's your take on this so far?
I am a Pearl guy. I love Pearl. One of the first, other than BASIC, I guess that's my second language or scripting language that I learned. So, I cut my teeth really on modern programming with Pearl. So I love it. I've moved on to Python mostly, but I still think back, like as I'm trying to figure out Python, I still think back, now how would I do this in Pearl? Let's see. Oh, yeah, that's how I would have done it. Let's see if I can translate that to Python. So I do have a little bit of Pearl knowledge. I never did it professionally, but so I'm interested to see. I think for me, it's more of what's still relevant. Is there anything I should go back to Pearl for versus using Python today? And maybe performance is one of those issues. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's also interesting is as I've been studying this, I've reviewed a little bit of the materials that Will sent me before we started today. And it was pretty interesting because I didn't realize that as they kept adding more and more features to Pearl, it actually sort of, you know, certain things sped up, but a lot more of the stuff slowed down. So this is really kind of the right time to approach this and really say, what tricks can we use? What cruft is being carried around in the current Pearl that nobody uses or is supposed to use anymore? And how can we fix that? So he's really got on track here about how to make that all work. So I'm glad he found his passion. Well, we're going to bring him on in just a second, but I have an important message before we continue. Because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. training. For a free 7-day trial and the 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. Because IT changes daily, and a good IT pro is constantly learning and staying up to date with current technology certifications. IT Pro TV's high-quality video tutorials will not only keep your IT skills current, but they will bring you closer to achieving that new IT job that you've been working towards. They've got 1,000 hours of content, and new courses are being added weekly. You can stream their courses live and on demand worldwide to your Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, or PC. Plus, learn on the go with your mobile device. Course topics include things like pfSense, Citrix Zen Server, CCNP Security, A+, AWS, Ethical Hacking, CompTIA Advanced Security Practitioner, Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE, and more. 100-plus step-by-step virtual machine labs and Transcender practice exams. That's a $109 value. One low monthly subscription price, a no-hassle cancellation policy, and transcripts that you follow from start to finish or jump right into any part of the video. And corporate and group pricing is also available. Clients include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. So check out itpro.tv/floss to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 per year. But we have a special offer. Try it for free for 7 days when you sign up using our code FLOSS30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/FLOSS and use the code FLOSS30 and try it free for 7 days. Plus, save 30% off the life of your account. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of Floss Weekly. Now, let's go ahead and bring in our guests. Will the Chill Braswell, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And where are you speaking to us from?
I am joining you from sunny Austin, Texas.
Yeehaw. Austin. Yeah, I've been to Austin quite a few times. I taught for Motorola there for a while with my Learning Pro classes. So that was back in the day, though. It was like, 20 years ago, 15 years ago or something. So let's start with the overview. I kind of gave my take of it, and that also tells me how good your elevator pitch is. So why don't you start from the 30,000-foot view and describe what it is, what problem are you trying to solve by doing all this, and how did you get started?
Okay, well, the problem that we're trying to solve is, as you said, there are a number of parts of Perl, Perl 5 mostly is what I will be talking about, that could be much faster. So I guess there is a sort of misconception, I would say, in the Perl community that Perl is fast enough. We're just as fast as, you know, Python or Ruby or any of these other languages that you might think of as the highly dynamic family of languages. And I would counter that and say, as much as it may pain us to think so, I don't believe that's true. In fact, I really believe that factually that's not true. If you check out the online benchmarks at the Alioth game, or the also known as the Shootout benchmarks, you'll see that Perl is ranked at the bottom for many or most of those benchmarks, which is not good, obviously, for those of us that love Perl and want to see more success and speed for Perl. So really, the things in Perl that do run fast would be what most people think of when they say that they're running a Perl application and it's running just fine, because 90%+ of their app is probably based on database and regular expression stuff. So that database that you're accessing is probably written in C, and you're really just doing sort of a binding to that. And the regular expression engine is also written in C, and it's really a separate language that's sort of bolted onto Perl 5 and embedded within it. So basically, if you're telling yourself that your Perl 5 code is running super fast, you're probably fooling yourself, unfortunately, because it's probably just the C code that's running fast that your Perl is calling. So I kind of got started in this because I was unhappy with how fast Perl was running when you write pure Perl code. We also think that string processing in Perl is super fast, but really it's mostly the regular expression engine that's fast. The string processing could be faster as well, and certainly numeric processing, it could be way, way, way faster. So I started investigating this issue a decade ago and was very hopeful when different ideas came out, like the old pony idea and parrot and stuff like that. And I think a lot of us were very hopeful. Unfortunately, none of that really panned out. So back in 2012, I brought out a few people to Austin to meet with me here. And that was sort of the two main guys that I claim as my co-founders with me for Perl 11, which would be Ingi.net or .net, depending on your pronunciation, and Rainy Urban, R Urban. And they both came out here to meet with me at my office in Austin. And at the time in 2012, we had a bit of a Perl 11 summit. We're sort of retroactively naming it. There were some other people there as well. Flavio Glock was online with us and some other people on Google Hangouts at the time and in person. And we discussed sort of the different options of how to move forward with our own personal issues with Perl. My personal issue is the speed. Rainey is also concerned with speed. And Ingi was concerned with modularity of the core. So Ingi did himself coin the term Perl 11. He was making a reference to Spinal Tap, as in this Perl goes up to 11. It was also, of course, meant to be somewhat tongue-in-cheek with the 5 plus 6, Perl 5 plus Perl 6 equals Perl 11, in that we would hope to eventually have a reunification effort occurring there as well. Because those of you familiar with the Perl community know that there's been a somewhat of a fragmentation based on the 5 and 6 incompatibility. And so we left the Perl 11 summit with this idea of a philosophy of Perl 11 instead of an actual version number. Maybe in a number of years from now, there will be a real version number of Perl 11. But right now, it's just a philosophy really that that says we want to achieve modularity and pluggability of the Perl 5 core at the very least, starting there, really for all the different components and levels of the core. So for me, the parts that need to run fast, those would be the components that I would be concerned about plugging different faster bits into. And other people may be concerned with other parts. So That was where we kind of left in 2012. We all went back our own separate ways to think about how to approach it. And I guess that's kind of the top level view of how we started Perl 11. Was that a sufficient answer to your question?
Yeah, it was a great answer. That's all the time we have. Well, we'll be seeing you next week. No, just kidding. I love long answers because it means I have plenty of time to think of what I'm going to ask next. One of your goals was to make Perl 5 more modular. And I'm thinking back to the conversations that actually launched Perl 6 because the code base of Perl 5 had become unwieldy. I remember people saying that. I haven't watched the source code of Perl 5 for a while. Has that been mostly upgraded and cleaned up in the subsequent, dozen major releases?
Well, I will give the disclaimer that I'm not a formal member of the Perl 5 Porters group, although I am now starting our opening lines of communication per the direction of TPF, the Perl Foundation. But I can tell you that I have to work with the Perl 5 core, by which I mean Perl Guts, the C code that Perl 5 is written in. And and I can tell you that it is not exactly understandable by mortal humans.
Ah.
So I I've spent years trying to understand just barely enough of it to plug in my parts into it. Once you get inside the actual Pearl 5 core and you're looking at the C code, what you're looking at is C89, which is good because it allows us to be compatible with all the old systems. But it's mostly written, or a large degree, I don't know what percentage, is written in C macros, which is actually a, you know, sort of a different language itself. The C preprocessor, CPP, is the command line for that. And so you end up with sort of what they call C macro soup, or just macro soup. And that's a description of, as you say, it's a kind description as what really is the unmaintainability or the difficulty in maintaining the Pearl 5 core. We all love and need and rely on the Pearl 5 core. I mean, much of the internet still runs on the Pearl 5 core, whether people want to admit that or not. It's just that I would not expect to be able to make any major, major changes to the Pearl 5 core ever until we have a totally new architecture that allows us to plug in one bit at a time to replace one bit at a time of the core. And that's what we're kind of trying to do with the Pearl 11 project.
So you're saying the code base is still kind of crufty. Has that harmed you? Has that restricted you in any way? I mean, I know like our Pearl has to have a fair number of changes to make that work. Are there things you can't quite reach, or are you just becoming one of those maybe immortal humans to be able to understand this?
Very good question. And before I answer that question, I would just like to point out for the record that Aaron is not actually a baron. That's I'm pretty sure that's him trying to copy somebody who's really actually much cooler. Yes. In real life.
Okay.
Okay. So sorry. The answer is I am slowly starting to understand these complicated parts of the Pearl 5 core, and it has been a problem, if only that it would be considered a level of technical difficulty that is, again, almost beyond the ability of a normal, even really good programmer to be able to understand. So I think of it as kind of as a ball of spaghetti, or, you know, a big Gordian knot. And, and it's taken us 28 years and a few months to tie this Gordian knot. And now we need to carefully untie it bit by bit, without ruining it or unraveling the thread itself. And it's going to take us another several decades probably to completely unravel the whole thing. But by the time we do, then we'll have a completely rewritten and modular Pearl 5 core, which can then be made compatible with Pearl 6 and whatever else.
Okay. And we're going to cover our Pearl in depth next week. So I want to kind of save some of that discussion for then. But can we talk about the other parts of what's in the Pearl 11 project, and who's working on them, and have they had releases yet, or is it still working in the background?
Very good question. So the number one Pearl 11 project besides our Pearl would be C Pearl. And this is written by Rainey Urban, and this is named after his company, cPanel, which I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of. And if you haven't heard of it, you've probably used their software, cPanel, either directly or indirectly. And cPanel is written in Pearl. The software cPanel is that is owned by the company cPanel, a little confusing there. They employ Rainey in order to optimize their HiMagic Pearl 5 code. So what he did was, after many different projects over the years, which many of which are still going, he ended up with C Pearl as one of them. And essentially what he did was he forked the entire Pearl 5 core himself. And added to that a large number of micro optimizations that when you add them all together, it actually results in about a 2x performance. So a 200% performance. So at least a, you know, about 100% speed up based on the normal Pearl 5 core. The reason why this is pretty crazy awesome is because he maintains full compatibility with all the high magic code that exists out there on CPAN, the Comprehensive Pearl Archive Network, where everybody stores all of their Pearl code to share with each other. And also maintains compatibility with XS, which is the binding between Pearl and C, so that all the people that have written their high-performance C code by hand, it doesn't break their stuff either. So what Rainey has done is a superhuman feat. I don't really know of any other person on Earth who could do that. He gets a lot of flack from people because he has a very unique personality, as do many people in the Pearl community. He argues with people sometimes, as do we all. But nevertheless, he has achieved a huge milestone in the Pearl 11 effort and also for Pearl in general, because what it basically means is that anybody right now can just go ahead and download C Pearl and install it right now. He has made his first release recently, and you don't have to change your existing Pearl 5 code in any way. Your whole company can just upgrade to C Pearl and get a 2x speed. So that would be kind of the main one that I would point people to right now. There are several others. Rainey is also working on a very futuristic project called P2, and sort of, you know, 5 plus 6 equals 11, and then the 11s kind of go together to make a 2, and then you end up with P2. So there's a lot of puns and silly stuff going on here. But basically what P2 is, a just-in-time compiler that is hooked into the pre-existing virtual machine that's called Potion. And it was written by a online programmer named Y the Lucky Stiff, who has since gone offline. And Rainey has taken over the Potion virtual machine and is working to implement a JIT compiler, which is P2, on top of Potion, which will be fully compatible with both Pearl 5 and Pearl 6. So that would be part of the reunification efforts for the Pearl 11 project. That's going to take a long time before that's ready, but it is still moving along. You can also give honorable mention to, again, Flavio Glock, who wrote Pearlito. This allows you to translate most of Pearl 5 and maybe some other stuff into JavaScript and maybe some other stuff. So it's a way of running Pearl 5 code inside of a browser. That's pretty cool. There were also a number of other smaller projects like GPearl and some others that you can look up. If you go to the website that you probably can see, pearl11.org, most of the links there are valid. We need to update it, but this is the original website that was created by Inge, has been updated by Rainey, and it houses the official C Pearl and P2 code on there. So that's pretty cool stuff. Yep, there you go. You can see the ASCII art for Potion and the genies out of the bottle and all of that. So there's a lot of work that's gone into Pearl 11. We just haven't pushed very hard to publicize it until now that we have released both R-Pearl and C-Pearl into the public for usage at this time. So it is now we're entering the age of Pearl 11. So yeah.
Awesome. You know, what I heard there that really inspired me is the C Pearl thing. A couple of questions there. Is it production ready? Could I deploy it here and feel confident?
The answer to that question is yes, because cPanel is already dogfooding their own project. Now, I don't work for cPanel. I will give you that disclaimer as well. Rainey does. He is employed professionally and full-time as a Perl optimization expert. And so, you know, again, most of the servers on the internet run cPanel, which means most of the servers on the internet run Perl, which means that most of those servers on the internet are eventually going to get upgraded and pushed out to be running on cPerl. And wow. So the answer is yes, the time is now for people to start upgrading to Perl 11 projects. You don't have to be stuck with only the original Perls anymore. And I guess the only last bit that I could tack onto that would be cPanel, of course, wants their version of Perl to be extremely stable in the long term because we don't want to break the internet. Literally, we don't want to do that. So right. What that means is that they're only going to rebase off of the mainline Perl 5 core every, you know, 6 months or a year or 18 months or whatever they decide as a longer term rebasing instead of, you know, every week or two or something like that. So if you need a feature that was released in the bleeding edge Perl 5.22.23.24 series, you might have to wait a little while before it goes into cPerl. But, you know, what are you actually really trying to use? What kind of features are you trying to use in the new bleeding edge stuff? Probably nothing, you know. So 99.999% of the people can and should go ahead and upgrade to cPerl now, today.
And so one of the things I'm curious is now that he's built a better Perl and it's, you know, feature for feature identical with the real Perl. It's all virtual anyway. Nothing's real. Have the core devs looked at his changes and backported any of them?
Good question. Yes, I do expect that many of the cPerl changes will make it back into the mainline core. I guess the polite way to put it is extreme personality conflicts between the cPerl developer and the Perl 5 porters developers. And that has caused the acceptance of code changes to be slower than normal. But it's happening just slowly.
Well, I could keep asking questions for her, but I know Aaron wants to jump in here in a minute. But just before we do that, I got a little business to do. Because whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production apps, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I found out about DigitalOcean about a year ago, and I've been running a little free BSD box in the cloud to build all my packages for me in a custom way. Deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. That's mine. That's why I switched to these guys, because I could actually host what I want there. Select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. There's an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can get your droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They have you covered. And it's so easy to get started, you can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we are going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. We thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. And now, Aaron, sorry, let's finally turn it over to you for a bit.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I've been, you know, chomping at the bit here to get in. You guys have been going back and forth. I want to know some of the more basic questions here. I mean, the first one is, you guys have been talking about cPerl and rPerl and cPanel and all this stuff. I mean, it really does speak to the longevity that I think Perl has had, but I guess the first question is for Will. I mean, you obviously know a lot about this. So what is your background, if you could sum it up? I mean, how long have you been working on Perl, and what kind of other projects have you done?
Okay, so I have a background in computer science and mathematics. I got my degree from Texas Tech University. I started working on Perl back when I was a young teenager or a kid. I just started writing scripts for fun, I guess, and obviously used many other languages along the way, as you are required to do in order to get a degree in computer science. I came away from it all loving Perl and wanting to only work with Perl. So as I said, I got really excited when I thought that some other projects would be able to make a significant upgrade to the Perl 5 core. And when that didn't happen, I kind of became desperate enough to do it myself. And that's when I took the steps of getting in touch with Inge and Rainey and all of those guys.
Wow.
So probably, probably been working with Perl since the mid-90s.
Wow. No wonder. I'm totally blown away by all this stuff that's happened. Perl 5, Perl 6, Perl 11. Is this kind of all blessed by, I mean, I know it doesn't have to be necessarily, but I mean, in the community, I mean, Randall mentioned the core devs bringing things back, but do people, are they accepting this? Are they supportive of it? I mean, is Larry like, hey, this is a great idea, or is it more of a rogue effort?
I would say that the most honest question I can give on the record is that we sort of started out a little bit rogue, if only that it was kind of because of the failure of a bunch of other projects that we had to do that. But now we have been working hard to eventually become mainstream. I will be presenting one of the primary talks at the upcoming Yet Another Perl conference, which is our primary global conferences that we have. We will have an rPerl booth at the OSCON this year, which will be here in Austin, Texas. I also gave a short talk at last year's YAPSE, and also I gave one of the main presentations in Brussels at FOSDEM just a month and a half ago or whenever that was. So this is now gaining some more wide acceptance. And as for St. Larry himself, I met with him a number of times in person and sort of give him verbal updates on what we're doing as we go along. I try not to to bog him down too much, but he is well aware of what we're doing. And his latest feedback to me was have the appropriate amount of fun, which is one of his famous sayings. And another one of his famous sayings is let many flowers bloom. So Perl 11 could be seen as a small garden that is in the Perl neighborhood, as we call it. And we're trying to cultivate a number of new flowers, and it's not clear which of them will bloom and which won't. But I can tell you that cPerl and rPerl are the two that are for sure now in full bloom. And as for the others, only time can tell.
Hmm. Oh, that's cool. I mean, that's one thing I love about the open source community is that people are generally, it's like, hey, if you want to take the code and go do something, go do it. That's why it's open source. And I love have the appropriate amount of fun. That cracks me up, you know, not too much, just the appropriate amount. That's kind of funny. So I do have to ask you about the chill, though. It's on my list of questions to ask. You saw the Baron. That was my playground nickname that people would pick on me with in school. They would say, "Oh, I think they would say Aaron Farron, the big fat Baron, or something like that." Was the way that one went. But what's your background? Why are you called the Chill? Just because it rhymes?
Good question. Yes, that is actually one of my old handles, and it's the name of a character from a science fiction book by John Shirley, if I remember correctly. And it's actually, a short story. It's about a really cool guy who takes part in a new intergalactic sport where they control and collide entire planets based on astrophysics. And he controls a huge spaceship in order to do that. And it was just one of the really cool science fiction stories that I read when I was a youth. I read the entire sci-fi section of the library at Montclair State University. Some people may know I started college when I was 12, so I had a lot of time to read through the library contents. And I really thought that was a super cool story. And the guy had a name that was the same as my name, and it does rhyme, and it sounds pretty cool. So it just stuck. And at this point, you know, I've been approached by people on the street who are like, are you Will the Chill? So I guess it works.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely does. 12 years old. Holy moly. I started at 16. I thought I was a baby. 12 years old. That's fantastic. Hey, I wanted to ask about, I don't know if there's a delicate way to say this. So, you know, with all these new languages that it seems like people have been moving to, we talked about some of them, Ruby and Python, and I guess you could even include Java in that as a newer language than Perl. Do you think that all this work that's going on could bring developers back to Perl? Is this filling a gap that's needed in the Perl community in order to attract more people to start using or go back to using Perl?
So I think that the perennial and cliched question is Perl dead? And the answer is no, we're just in a zombified state. Okay, ha ha ha, no, not really. Basically, this is a legitimate concern within the Perl community because there was a split within the development community of Perl when St. Larry went to start Perl 6, and he left Perl 5 in the hands of the capable Perl 5 porters, but he was no longer involved in that. So the community kind of had to – it felt like the community had to choose between if you were going to stay with one version or go to the other version. And this perceived split in the community, when coupled with a hordes of new languages. I mean, Erlang, Go. I mean, the list goes on. Rust. I mean, who's even heard of these, you know, different languages? But they're there and they're significant. And I'm sure all the Rust people out there are like, I'm going to get you, Will the Chill. But no, basically, there was a major problem because, you know, Perl is no longer really taught in most American universities anymore. And that's hurt us a lot. And it's looked down upon as being an old or out of date language in general. And that's one of the specific things that we're trying to address with the Perl 11 effort, which is to have an upgraded modern Perl for all of the Perl 5 people. And then obviously Perl 6 has been officially released with a 1.0 version. So that's off to the races as of this past Christmas. And so now you really, where it seemed like we were stuck with a dead end on both Perl 5 and Perl 6 for about a decade or two, we have now come out of that long dark tunnel, finally, just now, and we've got brand new amazing things for Perl 5 and Perl 6. So I would say that actually My joke of Pearl being in a zombified state is pretty much not a joke. We were kind of powered down at least for 15 years, and now we're powering back up again. So watch out, world, because the truth is that Perl is a much more mature language than all the other dynamic languages. With the addition of the Perl 11 projects, Perl is going to be much faster than all the other comparable languages. And the feature set of Perl 6 is beyond almost superhuman understanding. So anybody who was worried about the future of Perl can stop being worried now, finally. I was worried for a long time, and now I'm not anymore. So it's going to take a couple decades for us to fix the damage or to undo the negative PR, but there's no way that you can stop Perl 11 or Perl 6 or any of those things that we're working on. So it's just a matter of time at this point.
Yeah, well, I know that – we don't have to ask Randall. We know he agrees with you on that one. But let me just turn the table on you a little bit then. As an enthusiast, longtime coder and working with Perl, what wouldn't I use Perl for at this point? What would I be better off – like, for example, for me, and I don't think this is the answer to the question, but I do a lot with small board computers or single board computers, depending on how you want to call them, like Raspberry Pi and those kinds of things. And I use Python there. And the reason I use Python there is mostly because that's what the community decided to support by and large on those platforms in terms of tutorials and things like that. So I can go learn about how to do something on the Raspberry Pi by using Python a lot easier than I can by using Perl, just because the documentation is out there and I don't have to, you know, think about, oh, how do I read this, read the value of this photoresistor or something. It's like right there and it's all in Python. So is there something that I would not use Perl for? Just because of the state of where it is, or just not designed well for?
Very good question. And I would have to split my answer into two parts, the technical part of the answer and the sort of community or business side of the answer. The technical answer is there's nothing that you would not use Perl for at this time. Obviously, Perl 5 being the established Perl at this juncture, you would use Perl 5 for nearly anything. There would only be a few exceptions from a technical standpoint when you would need to use one of the other Perls. Obviously, you could use cPerl for anything you use normal Perl 5 for, as we discussed earlier. If you really need your code to run at the speed of C or Fortran, in other words, as fast as possible, because you can't really get faster than that, then you would need to use rPerl. And if you want to do some crazy new experimental meta grammar, you know, mind-bending psychedelic space age business, then you would need to use Perl 6. But 99%, again, of people would want to go ahead and just use Perl 5 or the drop-in replacement of cPerl, and for any technical reason that would suffice. The second half of my answer, being the community or business side, is where it gets more difficult for the Perl people and less happy for us, I guess, because of what you mentioned, that in many sort of vertical markets, like a small board computer would be a vertical market, you're almost sort of railroaded into using a specific language or technology because, as you said, the community has just glommed onto that for whatever reason. And nowadays, that language usually is Python because it is seen as sort of the successor of Perl after there was the Perl 5, Perl 6 community split fallout. So we're still licking our wounds from that. Whereas Python was able to just step right in and be like, we don't have a problem like Perl does, use Python. And everyone was like, yeah, that's obviously the logical answer. So in academia now, for example, all of your college students, at least in Western universities that I'm aware of, their professors are just having them use Python, and they're not going to question that. They're just trying to get their homework done and earn a good grade and get credit and graduate. So, of course, they're just going to use Python, and then they're going to graduate, and what are they going to use? Python. Or they're going to get a job where their boss tells them to use Java because Java is the new COBOL. Yep, now all the Java people are going to, I hate you, Will the Chill. Well, you know, the COBOL people can shake their even older, more wrinkly fists for the same reason. But basically, you know, the reason why people use Java, in my snarky opinion, is because their manager told them to. And that's because their manager maybe wrote a few lines of code but doesn't actually know what he or she is talking about. The people that are using Python in the workplace are probably doing it for a much more legitimate technical reason because they need to in order to get their project done. You know, I happen to have a good buddy who is in the quantitative finance vertical market, and everybody there is on Python. And I've, you know, gone around and around with him for years on, oh, well, let me help you use Perl for this or that. And, you know, maybe someday we will. But he is stuck with Python because that's what everybody uses. So if you're trying to work in a space where your only solution seems to be Python, because when you Google it, the first five pages are about Python. And if you don't know any better, then you're probably just going to start using Python. And I'm not picking on Python, but Python is the gorilla to be concerned about right now for the Perl community. So we're going to have to, again, spend the next 28 plus years repairing the damage that we've done now in order to build back up where we don't have that negative PR anymore. Again, though, from a technical point of view, if you go to just metacpan.org or just Google CPAN and use any of the other search mechanisms and type in whatever it is you're trying to do, your, you know, Raspberry Pi, type that into metacpan, it will probably give you a number of existing software solutions for that space that you're working in. So from a technical point of view, you should and can and probably hopefully will go use Perl.
What a great answer. I've been agreeing. I've been sitting here nodding the entire time you're talking here. You clearly have the advocacy role perfected. We're almost out of time. We're almost right up against a hard deadline. So, but I do want to ask one question before we get together again next week, which is there anything that we didn't talk about today about Perl or Perl 11 umbrella of projects other than our Perl and your other two projects there, the Math Perl and Physics Perl? We'll talk about all those next week. Is there anything else that you want to make sure our audience is aware of about the Perl 11 project?
Well, I would like to say, obviously, that you would want to go to our website, perl11.org, and mm-hmm. also we are online IRC. If you go to irc.perl.org as your server, we are in the channel that's called Perl 11, just P-E-R-L-1-1. And I'm on there as Will the Chill. Rainey comes on there as R Urban. Ingy's on there as well, and a number of others. So come chat with us. Talk to me personally, and I would love to find out how you want to use Perl 11 and how you would like to engage us in that. Oh, and I do have one other thing to ask Randall since we're out of time.
Yep.
I was just wondering if you could sign my book.
How do I do it remotely? Hey, you're gonna be at OSCON and YAPSE. Bring it along.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate
it. Both of us. All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks for coming on the show this week. That was, of course, Will the Chill. What do you think, Aaron?
Well, I mean, it's got me thinking about Perl again, right? You know, I think that there as a marketer, which, you know, that's I'm a very technical person, but the way I make my money is in technical marketing, being able to connect the dots, so to speak, between the technical side and the, you know, OK, what's the business benefit? You always have to talk about differentiation. Right. And so when I think about this, I'm thinking, OK, well, what's the differentiation that Perl has or brings that, you know, Python or Java or any of these other languages don't have? And so I think that's the biggest thing that could turn things around in Perl's favor is what does Perl have that other people don't have? And so I think when we start talking about making Perl fast, that gets really interesting, right? Because other languages are slow, or maybe, you know, they just don't do things as well, or maybe they do things on a small scale well, but not when you scale them out and make them bigger. So I think all of this work is really good. And like you said, there's nothing wrong with Perl. I still have Perl stuck in my head when I go to try to do something. How do I do this? That's why Java was so impossible for me to figure out, I think. Because I was like, well, it's easy in Perl. You just do this, you know? And it's like, no, this is Java. So I don't know. I think this is all good work. And you know, Perl is still a great language. So, you know, if for the younger developers out there, if they haven't tried it, I hope they pick it up and give it a try and add those semicolons where they didn't expect to have to add them, and it'll all be good.
And I could recommend a couple of good books if you want to learn Perl.
I've got it right here. You want me to pull it down?
Other people said, oh, you got yourself there. Okay. Yeah, and the other thing I like about this is that the CPAN, I still think, is the killer app for Perl. Maybe I'm just naive, but I don't think there's any other ecosystem where it's so easy to contribute code to the cloud so everybody can reuse it everywhere else. Maybe a little too easy as people are concerned about security of that, but it seems like there's a lot more work to go through if you're going to be in one of those other ecosystems. So CPAN is now getting something like 60 or 70 new uploads a day. Wow. I remember during the .com boom, it was like 10 uploads a day, and I'd study each one to get a magazine article out of it. But now it's like it's just names buzzing by. I don't even know what's new there. So it's pretty hard to sort out. CPAN's definitely the killer.
Here's my books, by the way. I finally found them.
Yay,
right here.
Yay.
They're at my fingertips. Cool. This one's especially good. I don't know if you can make out
number two.
That one's especially good. But yeah, I mean, these are invaluable.
Yes, so. Indeed. Okay, well, we need to move out, sir. So let me recap the upcoming guests. That would be, we just said, Will the Chill's coming back next week to focus on R Perl and his other two main projects. Then we're going to be live at OSCON. We're going to be looking for a guest that we can plug in by Tuesday morning. That's a little tough, but we'll find out who we can get live sometime during the day on Monday so we can still meet our live schedule. Right after that, BUI, that's a private community-based crisis response system. It looks pretty interesting. Simple, which is a way of a simple API for making PDFs out of templates, is the result of a guy who's got a lot of really cool things to say about open source software in general, getting people to get involved with your community, lots of good things. So the project is just the excuse to get together to talk to this really interesting guy. And then best practices badge, where you could go through your project and answer a bunch of questions on the best practices page. And if you find that you're doing all the right things with your project, you can get a little badge to put on your website to say, yes, we've looked at this and we are doing all these things. So pretty darn cool. Twitter.tv/floss is the homepage for this show. You can find out from there who we are also looking at for other upcoming guests. I'm still slowly filling out Q2. I send probably 20 emails to get one slot filled. So there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and hopefully we can get more of that together. We have a live stream with this show. The show normally tapes Pacific time, 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, but we've had a little shuffling around this week and next, so you're probably not watching it live on a Tuesday right now. Actually, I know you're not. That's ridiculous. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus, which tweets over to @FlossWeekly. You can follow me on Google Plus, it's Randall L. Schwartz, which also tweets over to Merlin, but most of my source content is actually on Google Plus. Again, I'm going to be at OSCON in a couple weeks. I'm going to be at YAPCNA in Austin. OSCON in Austin. YAPCNA is in Orlando. FISLE, my other show I'm doing this year, or one of my other shows, is in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And I've got some ideas for the talk I want to give there. They're just waiting for me on that. Otherwise, I'm already approved. And then DragonCon coming up in Hotlanta in September, where I'm going to be probably doing some information about the – we talked to them a couple weeks ago, the Mozilla Encryption Initiative and project. So I'm probably talking about that. I'm going to pitch that as one of the talks I'm going to give there. Anyway, that's all my plugs. Got anything quick to plug there, Aaron?
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. I'm so incredibly busy these days, so I'll just pick a couple of things. First of all, I'll be at IOUG, which is the Independent Oracle User Group conference called Collaborate. It's in Las Vegas on the 10th or 11th of April for a couple of days. So if you're going to that, if you're a DBA or Oracle DBA or something and you want to say hi, please come to the NetApp booth and shake my hand. I'll give you a free book. Might even sign it for you. But definitely come check that out and say hello. And then right after that on the 16th is Benicia Mini Maker Fair. So if you're in the Bay Area and you want to come to a really cool Mini Maker Fair, it's smaller than the big one. It's easy to talk to people and get around. Still see a lot of cool stuff. Come up to Benicia, and there's a discount code for Twit listeners or viewers, whichever way you like to partake. If you just go to the ticketing site and you put in the code TWIT, you'll get 20% off your tickets. So I hope you go take advantage of that. And I'm coming up, I'm going to be on the new Screensavers again on April 9th. That Saturday, I'll be on the new Screensavers. And I've got an important announcement on that show, so you don't want to miss it.
Cool. And Aaron, thanks for jumping in. And I'm sorry I took up most of the questioning time, but of course, this is my core area. So I was glad to get Will on to talk to him about these projects. They actually gave me a lot of things I need to go back now and talk to my clients about. Consider Sea Pearl. Can we run that on an instance and see if it breaks the website or whatever it's doing? So that'll be interesting. All right. Got to get out of here. So thank you, Aaron. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.